Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
I'm Emily.
I'm Kate.
And today we're talking about approaching money well with your partner.
Yeah, Joel, this is the episode that we're finally going to have our wives on. We've talked about this now for maybe a couple months that we do need to do this, and we actually are doing it now. We're at the beach, and we've had like what, 5 days now that we spent either at the beach or at the pool, and we're finally going to do a little bit of work, make some work in there with some of that play.
Yeah, we got a little bit of sunburn action going on. Our kids have maybe even more sunburn, but yeah, super fun beach vacation as a family. Tons of little kids running around, but we're so thankful to have this time together and so thankful to have our wives on the show today. So, Emily, Kate, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Sure.
They're a little shy. They don't get on the podcast very often. So
we have done this once before, right? A couple years ago.
Yeah. But don't go back and re-listen.
No, that was awesome. I feel like it went so well. And that's honestly why we've been wanting to do this again ever since then. We didn't go to the beach together with you guys last summer. It was 2 summers ago that we went to the beach together. We decided to record an episode with y'all on to talk about couples and money and finance. And so, yeah, I think we both really missed having that trip together with both of our families last summer. So we definitely got that trip on the calendar, but we also knew we were going to record as well.
Yeah, and on this episode, Matt, we're going to get to some Facebook questions that our listeners submitted, which are going to really form the basis for this episode.
Yeah.
But we are, of course, having a craft beer on this episode with our wives. Today on the show, we're drinking a beer called Road Full of Promise. It's a double New England IPA from our friends at Monday Night Brewing, who always turn out good stuff. And we'll see if this one is good, too. And normally you get two opinions at the end of the episode, but there'll be four this time.
Well, on that note, right, every episode that we do when we interview a guest, we always ask them what their splurge is, like what is their craft beer equivalent, because, you know, craft beer, that's one of the things that we spend decent money on. One of the first questions we had was from Lauren, and she asked, what is your craft beer equivalent? She wants to know what it is that you ladies like to spend money on.
That is a great question. I'm trying to think, what do I really splurge on? I'd have to say probably like products like facial products, expensive serums, non-drugstore shampoo.
Wait, we're talking like snake oil? You said expensive serums.
So you don't like the 99 cents Suave at Kroger when it's on sale?
You joke, but we do have a bottle of that in our shower that Joel bought one time that we just couldn't use.
Okay. No, I use it. I don't care about shampoo. You're the one who splurges on shampoo, which is great. I'm glad that that's something you enjoy.
I will say too, I use that same shampoo and I use it as my shampoo and my body wash. So I'm like one of those guys that...
You just two for one. Yeah.
There's no need to have a separate soap for my body. It's all the same.
Yeah.
In my opinion, but obviously not
true.
For you.
No, in my opinion, they should be different.
Yeah.
And probably expensive.
All right, Kate, what's your splurge?
Probably our front yard garden. I have spent a good amount of money on that this year. And just in water alone, it's quite the splurge. But it is a piece of my mental health, and it's a lot of our daily activities with the girls, and it's something that I really enjoy, I really love, and so that's where my money goes. Bought some fancy seeds, fancy heirloom seeds, so it's a beautiful garden. It's very expensive.
Yeah, you know, well, that's something we've talked about on the show before, how it's not necessarily a garden that we are growing vegetables in because it's more efficient from a money standpoint. It actually costs more money to grow these vegetables and to grow these flowers versus just going to Aldi or wherever we normally go to buy groceries. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we have kids at home now during the pandemic, like there is a lot that we're gaining from that garden, whether it be for some peace and quiet just to be able to get outside and work in the garden some, but also too, like you spend a lot of time teaching the girls, you know, about vegetables and like where our food comes from and kind of the work that goes into it. So it's
justified.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Totally.
All right. So on that note, next question, Tom says, what's the most non-frugal thing you guys do as a couple that you feel guilty about, but do anyway? So I say, Matt and Kate, y'all are up first.
Well, I'll go ahead and share, man. For us, like we don't necessarily feel guilty about this, but we just got done renovating our home and we spent a chunk of money renovating our house, and not necessarily to get it to be super high end and super fancy, but in order for it to have the accommodations, I guess, that we're looking for in our home, to have the utility that we were hoping to have. And I think some folks would like say that we're borderline house poor a little bit, right? Because so much of our money has gone towards our house. But for us, I think you would say, okay, like it's, I mean, it's been worth every single penny that we've put into it. And it's not something that I would necessarily recommend for lots of folks, but for us, it's been worth every single penny. Okay.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. The utility that we are getting out of that new space is amazing. So yes, we did spend a lot of money on that. And sometimes we did feel this seems like a little bit crazy, but we're very glad that it's done.
All right, what's our big splurge that we feel guilty about, Em?
Well, I feel like I'm stealing their answer, but I think it's house related as well. Like, there's a lot of little projects, and I don't particularly consider us fixer-upper people. So we paid someone to paint the house last summer, which was great, and like little projects here and there that we've spent money on that maybe we could have done ourselves, but we've just paid someone to come in and do it.
Yeah.
So little splurges like that.
Also, too, we live in a neighborhood with a bunch of old homes. We live in incredibly old homes. And just the choice to live in a home that's 100 years old means, by default, that you're going to spend more money on your house. And that's something that we've all kind of chosen to do. We're thankful that we live in these just awesome old homes. But they do require a little more upkeep. And I'm willing to also, I agree with you, feel a little guilty and spend the money to hire somebody to do some of these things. Oftentimes that means that we're able to spend more time together as a family because we're not necessarily doing all the house projects ourselves. But yeah, that's something that sometimes I do feel a little guilty about, but I think it's worth it in the end.
Also, maybe takeout. I always feel a little bit guilty when we order takeout, but I love to order takeout.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, let's keep moving along. Justine, she asks, how do you feel about your husband's sharing personal financial details on a podcast? What are some perspectives and details that your husbands share that you have a different take on? And I guess, Emily, I'll go ahead and kick this to you. You're already laughing, so maybe you've got something in mind.
This is a fun little question. I will actually confess that I don't always listen to the podcast, so I don't always know what gets
That's a wife
shared.
Burn,
hey, man, I can't blame her. We put out 3 episodes a week. It's a lot of content. She also already has pretty much heard everything I have to say. So.
Yeah, I feel like I get it 24/7.
It's like, why would I listen to a podcast where I can hear my husband talk more?
Right. I've already heard the story. Although there has been some funny incidences where someone's coming up and been like, oh, I heard you refinanced your house or whatnot. Tell me about that. And I am clueless as to how they knew about that until I remember the podcast.
Are you like, wait, we refinanced our house?
I was like, shoot, I didn't know that.
No, I shared that with her. She knows.
We don't have life insurance? What? I think that really was an episode one time. I feel okay with what you guys share, you know, and what we do. I feel like that's part of the podcast, and I'm happy to talk about our experience and have others learn from it for better or for worse. And I think as far as what's different than what's shared, I mean, this is true in life in general, but things always sound real nice on paper, and being frugal is such a good thing in so many ways, but you know, in the daily life to life, it looks like being a little bit cold in the winter because you don't want to turn on your heat or sweating in the summer because you don't want to turn on the air, or you know, just funny little quirky things like that that it always sounds good when you hear it talked about, but plays out a little different in reality sometimes.
So just like the perception of like some of the cheap things that
yeah,
we both probably do. I mean, I think Joel and I, you and I both do some cheap things that, like when you and I get together, we say, oh yeah, of course we would do that. That's how you save money. But then maybe to others, it's kind of like, oh, those guys are really cheap. I feel bad for their wives.
Yeah. Like for example, when I need shampoo and Joel comes back with, you know, the 99 cent Suave, and then it gets in the kids' eyes and they're crying because I don't know what's in it, but like apparently it makes them hysterical. And then
yeah, my VO5, it burns extra.
Yeah, it does. It's true. And then my hair is frizzy and I just look like a mess. And you think if we had just spent a little bit more in shampoo, we would all have been okay.
Guilty as charged. All right, what about y'all?
Well, there are certain things that we've talked about not sharing on the podcast quite yet. Just things that, like, this is a slow process for me. I'm not as open of a person as Matt. And so we've talked about a few things that, or he's asked me about a few things before sharing them on the podcast to make sure that I'm okay with it.
Okay. that's
like
good.
I got some points there.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And so I feel similarly to Emily. If it's helpful for somebody, I am generally okay with it being shared. We don't really have anything to hide. It's just a privacy thing for me sometimes.
So you're okay with us talking about the fact that you guys won the lottery recently, right?
Totally cool with that.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. Just making sure.
And when it comes to perspectives that Matt and I differ on, I think probably the easiest way to say that would be I advocate for us being for simplicity. Hmm. And so Matt tends to look at numbers very closely and take advantage of all the ways that we can maximize different things. And I tend to advocate for, let's just let that go and not make that extra 1% and let's simplify things. Save your mental energy for something else.
Right. Instead of only looking at things and doing things by the numbers, you're looking, right. You're talking about how sometimes we are looking at things from the standpoint of like, how can this make our life more simple? How can it make our life a little easier? And when you have four kids, I mean, you're looking for ways to streamline, right? I mean, I hear that in what you guys said as well, as far as paying for services. It's like, this simplifies our life in that it gives us time back with our family. I see that as amazing, right? Like, that's just a really valuable thing. And so, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that you bring that to our relationship, because I know that if it was just up to me, it probably would just be about the numbers. It's like, efficiency in numbers tell all. Never mind everything else that goes into, you know, what actually makes up life. So I'm glad that that's something that you're able to bring to our relationship.
All right, let's not get too gooey here, okay? All right.
Okay, yeah, so on that note, Alex, he wanted to know, like, what's something that you value very differently from your partner, and how do the two of you handle that difference when it comes to your finances? Emily, do you have something like that in mind for you and Joel?
Oh, definitely. I would say I value convenience at the end of the day. And if something costs a little bit more money, but it's efficient or quick or just sometimes the easiest solution, I will definitely take it. Case in point, tonight I was like, nobody needs to go to the grocery store. Let's just go to the snack bar. Like, I will feed my kids nachos. We will be fine. And obviously we didn't do that. It was great. Great call. Let's go and cook dinner. And we were well fed for a great meal and much cheaper. Or, you know, I'm just more willing to buy something that I've had my eye on, and Joel's more willing to shop around for it.
Or okay. Wait like a year and a half
or
until
a
cell phone gets cheaper, cheap enough where I feel like I can actually purchase it.
Wait
now.
Till there's a new one out, and that one is like, now the old one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. And so let's keep talking about couples and finance. There are some interesting questions, by the way, later on in the episode about how we talk to our kids about money that we're excited to get to. But Andrew asks, was there ever a point in your marriage where one of you guys ever felt overwhelmed by the other being obsessed with finances? My wife sometimes gets annoyed with how often I talk about finances and trying to find new techniques of saving, such as changing cell phone plans or insurance or asking about financial goals and like those sorts of things.
Yeah, so, Andrew.
he fit in with us. So how do you find that happy medium in your relationship?
Andrew, your wife and I should be friends. I'm sure we would have a lot to talk
Some
about.
Horror stories.
Some survivor tips. I mean, yes, there are definitely points in our marriage where your thoughtfulness, I will say, about money takes up time and space and is just a different way of thinking than how I would think about it. So sometimes it is annoying, just like I know there are things that I do that annoy Joel. I think in the end, very grateful that it contributes to the big picture of being able to save money and get to where we want to be, you know, in the large picture. But yeah, there are times it's annoying to have to switch cell phone plans. I mean, we did that this year and
yeah, it was last year.
Last year.
Sure. But in particular, I think early on in our marriage was when you were the most overwhelmed.
Yes.
Because I was really bad at communicating it. Like, I knew in my head what I wanted to accomplish, and I didn't have a good way of talking to you about it. And so I know that that you felt overwhelmed quite a bit when it came to money stuff, mm-hmm. just because I didn't know how to talk about it well with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we've grown in, you know, married almost 10 years now. That's something that we've grown in quite a bit, and I've gotten at least a little bit mature in talking to you about money and kind of why I'm doing some of the things that I'm doing, or why I want us to think about money or how we spend it or how we save it in a certain way.
Yeah. I'll say I think parameters around those differences has been really helpful. Like, I wanted a new pair of tennis shoes and I knew what I wanted and could have ordered them right then, but Joel wanted to look around. And so I said, here's 24 hours to look around and find me a deal. And then I'm ordering a pair of tennis shoes.
Clock's ticking.
And it, and it's great. And he found actually a great deal on tennis shoes that I really liked within 24 hours. So I think just those kind of boundaries have really helped us meet somewhere in the middle for me to say, I really want this. It's important. Can we do it by then? And then kind of give you the space to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, Kate, what about you? Do you feel that there's a way that we've sort of met in the middle a little bit?
Yeah. I don't think I would ever have described you as obsessed with finances.
I'm a pretty balanced guy, right?
You have other things that you're interested in. You just like learning. So you have all of these hobbies that you want to just learn more about, and finance is just one of those. So it's not like Matt's constantly talking about finance around the house. I think that's intentional also, because we don't want to model for our kids that that's the most important thing, and that's the thing we like to talk about the most. So we don't talk about it all the time. I also think that Matt has probably realized at this point that it's not actually good for our relationship for him to talk about anything that much. So like, he can't even talk about bikes obsessively. I'm gonna get annoyed. Or like gardening, couldn't talk about gardening. Yeah. Anything constant, like I need space and time to hear what's being said and form a thoughtful response or opinion. So anything that's talked about constantly is overwhelming for me. So that's just a communication thing for us. So we do talk about finances a good bit, but it's usually at a set time, and we kind of go into that conversation knowing what we're going to discuss, so that it isn't something that's like this constant flood and I feel constantly underwater trying to keep up with the newest whatever in finance. So I appreciate that. I think that's something that has taken us years to come to, because there have been times when we talked about finances too much and it was too hard for me. It got too overwhelming. So I sympathize with this guy's wife. I don't know that that's the answer Andrew is looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the answer too is not necessarily like meeting in the middle and compromising, but almost finding an appreciation for what the other is bringing to that relationship, right? And so like, Emily, what I'm hearing you is like, yeah, like, yes, you've set parameters, like you've set a time limit, but it's in the end, you've been able to appreciate and realize what it is that Joel's going for, which is like, he wants you to have the shoes, but he just wants you to get them on sale. You know?
Exactly.
And so it's not like he's trying to find a deal maybe less than he was before, but it's sort of like, I don't know, just appreciating maybe what the other person, what it is that they're seeking after, I feel like can really help.
Yeah. I think at times in those discussions, it felt like to Emily that I didn't want her to do something or to have something. And I was like, no, that's not it. Like, and so we, yeah, those were the kind of discussions that we had to have. So she could see my intention and what I was thinking behind the scenes. And that just had to come out in order for us to have productive discussions about money.
Nice. And then one last question here in this first section before we break. But Cynthia, she wonders, how do you balance different approaches and interest levels in money management so that one partner doesn't carry the burden or seems like the final decision maker on everything? Emily, go ahead and pitch this one over to you first.
I think we strike the balance through communication largely. And I think also because I have to notice and be aware that some things that I want are emotional or personal or sensitive, and I have to just communicate what those items mean to me. I think when we spend money on them, or when maybe he wouldn't want to pull the trigger and spend money on that and I would, and we just kind of have to communicate through that. I think we also strike a balance is that there's some categories that are just black and white that are really helpful. Like, how much do we want to spend on children's clothes or the grocery budget that we're trying to aim for? So that helps. And then we just spend time communicating over what it is we need or what we want. Or then for a while, I was the one who tracked all the budgets and that felt overwhelming. And so we had to communicate about that and kind of switch around the way we did do it. So it is, it's not a constant dialogue, and that I'm as interested in it as Joel. And so we're always talking about finances as much as it is. We just kind of have to sit down sometimes and have a meeting and make sure we're on the same page over any spots that we might have a difference on.
Yes, Emily, I completely agree with that. I think for us, it's, we have a similar interest level in reaching our financial goals. So we come to money management and to those conversations with just different pieces of that puzzle. Matt comes with all of the numbers. He does all of the bill pay. He does all of the categories, but the budget was built together, and I come with like the family dynamic portion of that, or family culture portion of that conversation. And so we can come together and put the money details with the family culture details and come to some agreements together. So yes, he is the money person in our house, but it doesn't feel like he's the final decision maker because he's the money person. And we don't talk about all of our purchases. We have categories for each child. We have categories for each other. We have categories for entertainment and things like that. And most of those categories I spend out of knowing what we've budgeted for that without ever consulting Matt before I make a purchase.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that we do communicate on, like the overarching goals. But then when it comes to like the just the day to day, month to month, you know, gritty details, like we don't sit down and have a conversation at the beginning of every month saying, what should our entertainment budget be this month, or how much should we spend on groceries? That's just kind of automatic at this point. We've created a budget enough to where this is not an ongoing discussion. But yeah, when it does come to some of these bigger goals and, you know, what we're doing to achieve those goals, that is something that we come together and we talk about. And it's worth noting too, I would say that you don't come to the, you know, these conversations with 100% of the family culture in mind. And I don't come to the conversation with 100% of the money details.
That's true.
And maybe it's more like 80-20, you know, like I might come to it with maybe 80% with money in mind and 20% of our family goals. And maybe it's, you know, vice versa with you. But obviously we both have some input on what we want our family to look like, as well as the goals that we've set.
Yeah, I agree. I always welcome a conversation that is goal oriented, and I hardly ever have a conversation with Matt when it comes to like, I want to buy something for myself or something for the girls. It's just not part of the conversation. We try to talk about the bigger things that matter so we can save our energy for other things, honestly.
Which is important because we have less energy these days. So.
Yeah. And I think too, it's helpful when you're talking about how couples handle money and how Emily and I handle money together is kind of what our individual strengths are. And so Emily is so much better at the details than I am. I'm more of a big picture person. So I might have like the wacky ideas or just kind of maybe a bigger move I want us to think about or a direction I want us to pivot into. And she is so helpful at one, giving me the reasons why maybe my idealistic or overly optimistic ways of thinking, maybe in the ways that they need to be challenged. And then at the same time, you're so good at the implementation when we do decide to do something different. Yeah. So I feel like it's really important when you're talking about money with your significant other, like where are your strengths and how can you help each other out when it comes to handling paying the bills or thinking about the future. And so Emily, you handle the spreadsheets too. Like I don't handle the spreadsheets. I send you invoices for rental property stuff. I'm day to day managing tenants and stuff like that, but you're kind of handling those other parts that I hate doing and I'm not good at doing. And so, yeah, I think in any conversation between two people who love each other and want to handle money well together, it's really important to see which strengths you have and which strengths your partner has, and then kind of to fit them together in the best way possible.
Nice, man. Well, these have been some awesome questions, but I feel like even better answers from our wives. And I also feel that we're kind of just getting warmed up.
Real different talking into a microphone.
Yeah, y'all are doing great. And so we're going to take some more of these questions, specifically some ones having to do with kids. We'll get to those right after this break.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking about approaching money well with your partner. And Matt and I, we've brought our partners on this episode. My wife, Emily, sitting to my left. Matt, your wife, Kate.
I've got Kate. I guess we should have said who our wives were at the beginning. Like we said the names, but did we like link them directly with us? So it's Matt and Kate. It's Joel and Emily.
That's right. Yeah.
There you go.
So we've got some more questions. We're going to get to questions about raising kids and what that looks like and how we handle money in light of raising children. But the first question I wanted to make sure we hit on came from Megan. She said, what was or is the most unexpected expense you guys have ever dealt with?
Oh, geez.
Well, we've already talked about ours, which is definitely our home renovation.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought we knew how much that was going to cost and we were wrong.
Oh, so basically it's not the fact that you budgeted for something, but obviously it went above and beyond.
Right, which we're very unfamiliar with that feeling.
Yeah, because normally when it comes to budgets, like you stick with it, but it's like a home renovation when it comes to just working with builders. They have no concept of sticking to a budget. It's like, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that anymore. It's like, but that's what we planned on. It's much different than managing a household and having a budget. A renovation costs a lot of money, so that that's definitely an easy one.
Okay, what's ours, Em?
I would say maybe medical expenses.
Yeah,
just sick kids or sick doctor visits or child who was constipated and had to have a $300 x-ray to find out she was full of poop. So
yeah,
that's life as a parent though, right?
Yes.
That's a separate podcast. We
don't hospital bill shock is the worst.
It is. So you can even save for unexpected medical expenses, but it is always more expensive than you think.
And I remember our middle child, we got a bill for her delivery. You know, you get multiple bills, one from the doctor, one from the hospital, blah, 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 blah. And I distinctly remember getting one after she had turned one.
Yeah, she was 18 months old.
Yeah, and it was just, I was like, how is that even possible? I didn't think that that could happen. But apparently, the doctor's office doesn't have to send you it the bill in a timely manner. And so that $600 bill showed up and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I thought we had finished paying off her birth. So that's the biggest unexpected expense I remember. But yeah, I think medical bills are high up there for sure for a lot of people in this country, but definitely for our family.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, don't even get us started with healthcare costs when it comes to birth specifically, being self-pay and being on one of the health sharing plans. But so Lydia, she has a question and she asked, how did you prepare financially for your wives to stay home when you had children? What are some of the financial benefits of having a stay-at-home parent? And Emily, I'll go ahead and kick this one to you because I feel like a lot of folks are in that position where they were both working out of home in two separate full-time positions and, you know, and then they decided to maybe have a family. So yeah, how did you guys approach that?
I think we began by creating different revenue streams. So the rental homes were really crucial to that. So I actually think by the time I started staying home, which was not right when we had our first child, it was a little bit after. But at that point, what I was making, we were close to making that in
rental property income.
In rental property. Yeah. So I do think that was a great strategy.
That was really the whole purpose behind buying rental homes was, okay, if we want to continue to live on a certain amount of money per year, well, how else are we going to be able to make income if you want to stay home? And that was something that we debated for a long time. And we weren't sure whether you were going to or whether you wanted to. And then it ended up where you felt compelled to. And we were glad that we planned ahead for that.
Yeah, I will say one of the biggest financial advantages to stay-at-home parent we really saw when we had two children. And I was working for a nonprofit at the time and was literally going to cost more for two children in daycare than it was for what I was making. So that was a fairly easy decision in that sense to stay home. So I think that's a huge benefit. I think there are a lot of other financial benefits. I will say mentally is probably one of the biggest benefits for our family, just juggling Joel's career and work responsibilities and then also me being able to juggle more family and work that in. And if a kid gets sick, I'm able to stay home. I feel like that dynamic has really helped a lot mentally, not just financially.
Sure. Yeah. There's a lot to consider, right? When you're debating staying home with the kids instead of like staying in the workforce, it's not just about the money. There's lots of aspects of our lives that we need to consider. So Kate, how about you?
Well, it was a little different for us because Matt and I were working together full time on our own business. So it wasn't like we had two separate incomes and we were looking to replace one of our incomes. I was looking to step out of that business after our second daughter was born. And so for us, it just meant having a bigger emergency fund because our expenses, we're used to our expenses being variable and we knew that it could fluctuate once I stepped out of it. But really, I don't know that the business took a 50% hit when I left. Like Matt was able to pick up a lot of what I had been doing and I did work still part-time for a while.
Yeah, you did.
But yeah, it wasn't like we had replaced my income with something else. I just sort of slowly stepped out and we adjusted our budget based on what Matt could make on his own.
Yeah, for us, I feel like it's way less typical than what most folks are dealing with because it was a very gradual change, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, cool, it's almost like the business is the same, but then it's starting to slow down a little bit. It's not like, you know, we aren't pumping out the same amount of work that we used to. We're not making the same amount of income. And so I don't feel that a lot of folks are in that position, but still interesting to share for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I saw a stat recently that most couples would like for one of the partners to be able to stay at home, but our current economy has just changed the family dynamic and the income needs. So many jobs in the United States just don't pay as much as they did in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, equivalent to today's dollar. And so oftentimes each person in the partnership feels like they need to work in order to make ends meet. And I totally understand that. But I did find that fascinating that most people wish that one person could stay at home. And, you know, that's something that we weren't sure about. But when we wrestled and when we found a way to make it work money-wise, because we did decide that for our family, that's what we wanted life to look like.
Yeah, I think that was similar for us. We did make some changes to our budget in order to make that happen. Like, we had to scale back in some areas in order to prioritize one of us being home. So we couldn't keep up spending the way that we had, which actually we were happy to find out once we had a child that it was okay that we had scaled back a lot of things because we just weren't as mobile. We weren't traveling as much. We weren't going out as much.
That's definitely true.
it actually kind of worked out. That we were spending less naturally anyway, but that was part of me being able to step out of the business was us cutting our entertainment. It was us cutting our personal accounts pretty far back so that we could make that happen.
Yeah, sure. So on that note, right, on the professional life, Kristen asks, given that you're both staying at home, so this is to you wives, of course, do you worry about missing out on future career opportunities? So for example, getting out of the career game, having a gap on the resume, and if so, how are you preparing for it?
I do feel like I did really struggle with the decision to stay home because I really like working and I liked what I did. And it was hard to step back. And I would say definitely there's a lot of moments that I still worry about missing out. Or I think being home with my children and saying no to opportunities that have come across my path is one of the hardest things about being a stay-at-home mom. And then just knowing that there are these opportunities you could reach for, grab for, that would be great. That'd be fun work to do that would build your resume, would build what you want to do. And just to say no to them is tough. But I think I've prepared for that partly mentally, just knowing it's a season. I mean, our kids are, the oldest is 6. So they're still all very little. And there will be a season in which they're all in school and working is going to be much easier. So I just kind of know that that's the case. And I do think the opportunities will be there. The job that I worked for in the past has also still will come have me do contract work here and there. And I usually say yes to those kind of opportunities just to kind of keep my foot in the door. And I'll also say, even though I'm not necessarily in a workplace, I'm in a school, I'm in like our YMCA, I have made a ton of connections because I am staying at home and I'm with a lot of other moms or other organizations like, you know, like school that I'm involved in, that I think if I needed to find a job, I could network pretty well. I just think it's opened up a lot of opportunity relationally.
So for me, I feel like I know that once there's time, I will step back into some kind of work. Matt and I have experience starting a couple different businesses. So it's work is something I view very fluidly. I feel like I can,
work is fluid. I like that.
Well, I mean, we've started and stopped things. Yeah, and I don't know that everybody's experienced like, okay, I'm done with this career path and I'm going to shut this down. And then I'm going to start something else because my interests have changed or my abilities have changed. And so I feel like once everybody's in school, I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what I will start. I have no idea. I mean, it will be probably some kind of art related career. And that's close to all I know about that right now. So,
because we're also about 6 years from that.
Yeah, because I don't think about it a ton. But I also know that if we needed me to, I would just go get a job. Like Emily said, I would be able to kind of tap the networks that we have currently, and I would get a job if I needed to financially. But I look forward to one day starting something new. And because that's the position I'm in, I'm not worried about these years right now not doing something.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think that's so true, too, of our generation and how we view work. I feel like our older generations, like Gen Xers and beyond, they might view work as sort of like this thing that once it's done, it's done. You know, it's like, okay, my work career is quote unquote over. But I feel like so many of folks in our positions and of our generation they do see work a little more fluid. They see it as something that like, well, I'm going to try this for a couple of years. And then after that, I'm going to try this. And then let's see if we can get this off the ground. It's something that you can start and stop. And there's just different, you know, smaller pieces versus just this one giant piece that takes, you know, all of your effort to move at all.
Yeah. And I think that resume gap certainly worries a lot of women who do want to stay home, or men who want to stay home with their kids for a handful of years. And then they want to get back into the same profession. That's certainly something that could hold down your wages and that can be hard to overcome. But I completely agree, Matt. I think the dynamic has changed in recent years. And in particular, our generation has the ability to create their own business so much easier. It's so much easier to do that than it was decades ago. And at the same time, that kind of unspoken contract that you're going to stick with an organization or a firm for 30 years and then retire, that's not there either. So you're kind of expected to move around. And I do think that that makes it a little bit easier for the stay-at-home partner to not necessarily lose out on a massive amount of income due to those years where they're not in the workforce.
I would also say being a stay-at-home mom doesn't mean that you're not active and taking on projects. A lot of them are just volunteer-based.
Yeah.
And I would definitely include a lot of the things I've done on a resume, even though I wasn't necessarily employed for them. There's planning retreats, there's, you know, cooking for large events, like there's
being on boards,
boards,
this, like it's all experiential,
right? There's so many things that I think would be very valid to put on a resume.
Yeah, just because it's not a job from a company doesn't mean it's not resume worthy material that you're churning out in your daily life. I totally agree with that. All right. And then Crystal also chimed in on the kid front. She said, what approaches do you all have with regards to teaching your kids about money and how to build healthy and responsible mindsets around it? I think this is a good one for all four of us to kind of talk about. But we'll start with Kate.
I think the most important thing we are trying to teach the kids right now is that money is the result of work, that you're not just entitled to anything that you want. So we give the girls little jobs here and there, or they can ask for jobs if they want to make money, but that is how they are able to earn money, is through their jobs that they do to benefit our household or others. And so that's a big piece of what we're teaching them right now. They're six and under, so we're not getting too complicated with it. I think we are trying to balance that with modeling generosity and teaching them to be generous too, that money isn't just something that you hoard. Yeah, that's what our conversations are mostly about. I mean, if they earn $10 over the course of a month and they want to spend it on something ridiculous, we totally let them do that. We're not trying to control every move they make and encourage them to save up more so they can buy like a bike. Like if they've saved for 3 weeks or a month, then I think we generally applaud that.
Yeah.
Money coming from work, and then just being generous with that as well. So.
Yep. Yeah. You know, essentially any lesson that we can teach our kids where we truly are linking work to money, but at the same time, it's a balance between that and not just generosity, but work that they are supposed to be doing no matter what. This is something we talked about recently on a show. But there are certain tasks that the girls do around the house just because they're part of the family, right? And, you know, we joke that we'll ask them to do something and they'll ask, like, will I get paid? And we say, no, you're going to do that because you're just a part of the family. It's not something you're going to get paid for, but you still have to do it. And so there's a balance there between linking work and money, but also work as, like, you got to do that because you're just part of the family. But yeah, Jill and Emily, do y'all have some specific approaches on how y'all are teaching the kids about money?
I think we do similar to you guys. I think those are two important things we try to hit home. I also think we try to instill gratitude with money so that a trip to get ice cream is a big deal. Like it's a treat and we want them to tell us thank you, or to tell them whoever treated them to ice cream, thank you, just not just out of politeness, but to recognize that it's a treat, that money is hard earned by someone, and basically we don't want them to take money for granted.
Yeah, I think too, actually interesting, Kate, that you brought up not necessarily making them save for something even bigger or whatever. And that's something that we have had to change in our approach to parenting and money recently, is there were times where they would just want a toy any toy. And they're like, I'll spend my money on any toy. And so we would sometimes go to the dollar store and they might get something that would break within an hour. And that just, that was such an unfulfilling experience. And I hated seeing them spend their money on something that went in the trash.
Daddy, this is crap.
Exactly. Exactly.
Why did you let me buy this?
So we have tried to help instill a little more long-term thinking when we're talking about how they use their money. And so when we went to Disney World earlier this year with Emily's mom, that was one of those things. Okay, you guys can do certain things to earn money now, and that money is going to be saved for this experience and something that you can buy that's tangible on that day in the park. And so, yeah, anything that we can do to help them realize that their money is squandered if it's spent on something that, you know, it doesn't last very long, and try to help them to see that finding value with every purchase. And that's obviously impossible or incredibly difficult to teach really small children, but that's kind of at least somewhere where our heads are at in how we're talking to them about money. All right, last question on kids. Susie wants to know, what are your best hacks to keeping parenting costs low while also maximizing kid experiences? Emily, why don't you start this one off?
Let's say, again, out of our seven children, the oldest are six. Six and younger. It's so
seven children. Y'all have three. We have four.
Collectively. Sorry. Collectively. No, we do not have seven on our own. Collectively.
It's like a Disney musical or something.
So I'll say at those ages, lots of little things are still pretty magical. And so I think we try to take the time to stretch out the magic of, say, sidewalk chalk or just anything small, and that can go a long way, which is
an inflatable pool in the front yard all summer long.
That's a true story. This is what we do. So little things like that go a really long way. And I think that kind of goes back to instilling the attitude of gratitude, not just assumed that these things are joys that we get to have and experience. They're not necessarily given. And I think that kind of goes into little ways to stretch it. I would also say play dates. I mean, other kids are the best form of entertainment for my children, better than new toys sometimes. So we do lots of play dates.
I agree with everything that Emily has said. All the small things we tend to make magical. Any holiday we make up, any holiday that's real,
like made up holidays.
Yeah, we'll have a donut day. You know, we'll have a donut day for sure, and it will be a big deal because we will talk all day about getting donuts, and then eventually we will go get a donut. Or we'll make it. And that's what I was going to say. I think just Googling like DIY, anything your kid is interested in, has been really helpful for us to make something that a kid wants an experience. So if we build something together, or instead of going to buy a swing for the backyard, Matt pulls out rope and we like rig it around a tree and we spend hours on that.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was really fun. They wanted a swing. We made a swing. But just building something together and learning along the way and having fun along the way kind of stretches out. They get the treat or they get the thing that they're looking for, but we built it together, so it's an experience. And that's not to say that we don't spend any money on experiences for kids. We definitely do. What we do spend is very intentional. It comes with a lot of intent. So we're spending for impact. We're not spending just because the opportunity is there and it seems like it would be fun. It's something that we've thought about and we think would be a good fit for our kids. So we do spend money on our kids' experiences. But for the most part, we try to minimize that.
Yeah. And just starting at home with what you already have, that's probably maybe it's the first step in saving money is not spending any, right?
Yeah. Embracing some of the free stuff too that we have access to.
Yeah.
Especially the outdoors is something that we like to do. Yeah. But I think those are some good thoughts. All right. We got some more questions we want to get to, including questions about frugal recipes and date nights and also the high costs of female maintenance. So we'll get to some of those right after this break.
All right, we're back for the break, and I wanted to mention, too, we never talked about how we're set up here in this rental house. We're at the beach, and if folks watched, like, the quick story on Instagram, but we've got, like, bedspreads hooked up to the blinds to help make it less echoey in here. Have y'all heard any kids crying like in the background?
No, unfortunately not. They're in bed.
Yeah. It's kind of a miracle, to be honest. Yeah. But I just want to applaud ourselves maybe for actually doing yes. this. I think this is going pretty great. But let's go ahead and dive into these questions. We got a few more for this episode. And Cindy asks, are your wives into biking as much as you guys are?
We do talk about it a lot.
We do talk about it. Gates, what's your response to that?
I do love biking. I love family bike rides. It's not something that I go out and do by myself, but I love what it does for our family and getting out and being able to talk and wave to neighbors and just getting around the city that way is super fun. I think Matt has a fancy bike and I have a normal bike. And so maybe that reflects how we feel about biking, but it is something that I enjoy. Yes.
I certainly have put more of my personal funds towards bicycles than you have.
Yes, for sure.
Emily, you have a bike.
I do.
It's not super fancy either.
No, it's not.
And it's like an old vintage bike.
I've had it for several years. And a true story, about a month ago, we were on a long bike ride and the gears finally unstuck. And I guess I realized I had been riding in about second gear all these years. I was wondering why it was so difficult sometimes, but now I have three gears that kind of work. I was very excited about that.
So you're definitely not a bike maintenance enthusiast.
No, I'm not. That's fair to say, but I do love biking, and a lot of times I'll take evening rides by myself. I mean, I enjoy family rides, but I also love going by myself. I also love spin classes. It's not like quite the same as biking that you guys enjoy, but I do enjoy that kind of biking.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'd say you guys like craft beer, which I think Matt and I both appreciate. You guys like biking. So it's nice to connect on levels that of things that we care about a lot. Lisa had a question. She said, please share your frugal recipes. I remember one person saying on the show at one point in time that they have the cost down to like $2 a person per day to feed their family. Matt, that's you. And also Bernice specifically wants to know the bread recipe that's been mentioned on the show before. So, all right, frugal recipes. Do y'all have any quick ones to share with us?
Well, first I'll say it was never $2 a person. It was $1 per meal per person. That was the cheapest we ever got it, which
it's still pretty cheap.
Yeah, definitely cheap. But we still eat pretty well though.
Yeah, that was what I was going to add. I think we could get it cheaper than that, but it wouldn't be as enjoyable. So
you can always make everything cheaper, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And ruin it in the process.
It just suffers, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you've got three gears. I mean, you could have no gears, Emily.
I didn't for a couple years.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Emily, you've done a lot of cooking research recently, and I feel like been intentional about like upping the food quality that we eat in our house. And do you have any favorite recipes that you've found or any new ways of going about cooking that you've enjoyed that you feel like saved us money?
I'll say the homemade bread recipe, which we'll have to share, that Kate created, is a big one. That's a staple in our house.
All right, we'll have to put that in the show notes, of course.
Let's do it.
So it's hard to give specific recipes, but just generally how I approach it is that we shop at Costco or anywhere where I can get some decent meat in bulk at a good price and then freeze it. And so regularly I'll pull out like chicken thighs that I cook in an Instapot with just different seasonings and different kind of flavors of broth. And so that kind of creates, it's super quick and easy and affordable, but creates a bunch of different flavors and serve it over different things. And so that's kind of easy, cheap, versatile. We eat a lot of eggs.
Yeah. Eggs are huge and they're big, they're filling. They're good for you and they're inexpensive.
It's true. I would actually love to know how many eggs we've gone through while on vacation
between our two families.
Yeah. So many eggs.
It's been a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree with Emily. It's hard to give a specific recipe, but our approach to food in order to keep the quality high but the cost low is we really minimize the amount of meat that we eat.
So basically the opposite of what Emily just said.
We eat a lot of meat.
You guys do eat a lot of meat. And yeah. Like for us, well, I feel like I'm stealing your thunder a little bit, but like, yeah, like how do you approach meat when it comes to our meals? Kate?
I feel like meat for us is more of it's usually within a sauce. There's just rarely a big piece of meat on the plate. So it's a topping usually, like on top of a salad, or it's part of a taco. It's not like taking up a section of the plate. it's on top of something or in something if we're having meat usually.
Yeah, it's there. It's adding flavor a lot of times, in particular if it's pork or bacon or something like that. But it's not like something that you're just chewing on, right? Yeah. Like if you're, we're not ever really just chewing on meat.
No, there's something else in there. It's usually vegetables. Yeah,
exactly.
I think because I'm looking for nutrient dense and I'm looking for cheap. And so that really equals vegetables for us. So usually at meals, we have at least two vegetables, often a lot more vegetables per meal. So there's just so many different ways that we prepare them. But a lot of the ways I prepare them is done ahead of time because I don't have a ton of focus around 4:30-ish when I start to cook dinner. A lot of things are prepped a day before, done in bulk a couple days out, or pickled last week or whatever. So that's how we get a lot of vegetables on the plate without spending a ton of time on it and keep things healthy and very affordable. And it keeps our vegetables from going bad.
Yeah, and so much of the keeping the cost down when it comes to meals, one, eat eggs. And then two, just don't eat out very much. I mean, I think that's typically the biggest cost killer, the budget killer for so many families is last minute. And to be honest, sometimes in our family, that's the thing that's the hardest. It's like, oh, it's busy. We haven't planned ahead. We're going to get something out. And, you know, a $40 meal to feed four people. Well, instead, if it's $1 per person per meal, you know, that dinner could have cost $5 or $6 as opposed to, you know, $40. And it really is. I mean, it's a substantial difference going out to eat or getting takeout versus cooking at home. Even if you're cooking with the nicer ingredients, right? Like a nice chicken thigh.
Or vegetable.
Well, I'm saying even if you're eating expensive meat.
An expensive meat, yes.
It's cheaper to do that and eat at home than it is to eat out. All right, and Brittany wants to know, she says, I would love for you guys to talk about some of your most cost-effective date night ideas. So what are those? Em, I'll start with you.
I would say one of the best things we do to keep costs down is we swap childcare on date nights. So, you know, one night, like say Joel and I are going to go out to dinner. We put our kids down and Matt comes over and sits in the den, you know, and babysits the kids while we go out. And then the next week we swap. So finding someone to swap childcare, because I think childcare oftentimes would be more expensive than whatever activity we're doing that would cost more. So swapping childcare has been huge in making it cost effective.
Yeah. If you got to get a babysitter once a week, that's going to crush your entertainment budget.
Yeah, it's cost prohibitive, right? Like when there's that expense that's there, like it even keeps you from wanting to do it all together. And that's obviously terrible for your relationship, right? If you're not spending that quality time with your partner.
I'll also say even especially during quarantine and when we've not really been able to go out, just marking a night as special and setting that aside has been pretty nice. That's actually helped. So the kids will eat an earlier dinner and we'll have dinner just the two of us later. And it may not even be that different or that extravagant, but for us mentally, we've just kind of carved out that time and called it a date night. And that's very cost effective, but it's also just kind of helped get into that mentality.
Yeah. It doesn't always have to be going out on the town. It can be at home. It can be done at home. And with quarantine, it's like, had to be done at home.
I feel like we used to spend a lot of money. We would go to nicer restaurants, or if there's a new restaurant, we are absolutely going to be there. And I think we've realized more over the last probably 2 or 3 years that just the experience of going somewhere together without the kids is all we need. So sometimes we will just go to a brewery and just sit there and taste some beers and have a good conversation. We've biked before, but just for us right now, what date nights need to look like is just space for us to sit across from each other and have an uninterrupted conversation about beer, or, I mean, it doesn't have to matter. It can be whatever. Sometimes it really does need to matter and it's about parenting and it's serious, but a lot of times we just need to remember to enjoy each other and have fun, and that doesn't cost very much money. So we go to some of the same neighborhood spots that are really chill. We sit on a patio. And it doesn't break the bank.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes we even eat ahead of time. I mean, like Emily, you mentioned like a meal with the kids and then you have your meal like later. Like we have a meal with the kiddos, and sometimes, like, I mean, Kate mentions beer or like dessert or something like that, which is rare. But sometimes we will just kind of go out and we just need a space where we can sit there and, yeah, like you said, like actually look at each other and have those conversations. So
let's say we also play a lot of games.
Yeah, we've been playing a lot of games here on this vacation already. I haven't won yet, which I'm really upset about, but I'll get over it.
Literally, happy about you are that. The only person who has not won a game yet, which is kind of odd. I feel like you're not quite on, but on that note, we probably are going to go ahead and wrap this one up here so that we do have some time to play maybe another game tonight. But all right, Joel, you've got one more question for the wives.
Yeah, no more Mr. Nice Norwegian. I'm coming for y'all tonight, okay?
I'm going to win.
I'm going to take you down. All right, but Kristen wants to know, do you ever feel frustrated that woman maintenance costs are so much more than what they are for a man? My spending on basic makeup, hair, prescription, skincare routine, all that kind of stuff makes me the top spender in my family. Is there any way to work around it while still managing to look good? I can't answer this question, so I'll, Kate,
this one
Emily?
Is directed specifically to the ladies.
Yes, yes, that is frustrating. It is so much more expensive to be a woman. I grew up with a brother and a single father, and he read an article one time that girls cost 17% more money. And so that was like always a running joke that my dad had to spend 17% more money
on you,
on his daughter. And he didn't understand it. My brother and he were so confused. But yes, it is frustrating. And especially since I like love hair products and kind of fun, girly things like that, that can be more money. I'll say I usually, a lot of times will ask for those for Christmas presents. So, you know, or Christmas or birthday or if Mother's Day, things like that. I kind of usually have a few things tastefully hint at that I might, that I might like. I also kind of have a routine. Like I think I find a product that might be expensive, but I know what I like and I just kind of buy that repeatedly. And if it ever goes on sale, I'll stock up on it. Little things like that.
And Kate, what are your thoughts there?
This is a conversation that Matt and I have had. So we have budgeted for that. And so the way that we approach budgeting is that once we've put that money aside, it's there for me to spend it and it's not there for me to feel bad when I do spend it. So yes, there is more money in my category than Matt's.
In the Kate category.
The Kate category is, yeah, there's just a little bit more in there because I do spend more on things like products than Matt does. But then Matt buys a bike and then for the next 5 years, we're even. So that's true. Real. Maybe more than 5 years for sure. I don't spend that much money.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do think that one of the things that I love so much about budgeting that I never thought I would say that phrase ever is it gives me freedom to spend money without feeling bad about it. So the fact that hair costs this much and makeup costs this much is just not something that I feel guilty about when I spend it.
That's great. Yeah, I think so much of approaching money well with your partner is how can we think through what the budget looks like? And then in practicality, what does it look like for us to be able to spend money without feeling guilty? Because the more we feel guilty about what we're doing with our money, or, oh man, if I do this, my partner's going to disapprove. We really have to be on the same page with that stuff. And guilt-free, I think, is a really important lesson for us for us all to learn in how we approach money with our significant other. But yeah, these are great questions from everyone in our Facebook group. So thanks for chiming in, setting us up for a fun conversation here tonight. But let's get back to the beer that we had on this episode quickly. We drank one called Road Full of Promise. It's a collab beer by Monday Night Brewing, which is local to us, and Weldworks, which is a brewery out of Colorado. And it's fun to all get to drink a beer together while having this conversation. Mm-hmm. Ladies, did y'all enjoy this beer?
I did. It was good. I really like New England IPAs. I like that style, and I thought this was a really good one.
Well, plus this is a 2X, so it's got two times the amount of flavor, two times the haze going on, and two times the breweries working on it, too.
That's true.
Man, I love collaborations, especially when you get one that's between a solid local brewery plus one you've heard of. I think I've only had one other beer ever by Weldworks, and I remember it being really stinking good. But Kate, yeah, what were your thoughts? Did you really enjoy this one?
Yeah, I loved it. I love
leading question. Sorry, did you really enjoy this one?
I really, really, really
enjoyed
it.
You make a good lawyer, Matt.
It's fantastic. I really enjoy a lot of Monday night's beers, so I think this one's great.
Well, yeah, I thought it was great. Yeah, just a delicious beer from two great breweries, and I'm glad we all got to share it together on our beach vacation.
Yeah, and wives, wanted to thank y'all as well for coming on and sitting down and talking with us. I'm sure spending a night recording while we're at the beach wasn't necessarily what you wanted to do, but I feel like this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
It was great.
All right, so that's going to be it for this episode. We'll have show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com, and we'll even have the recipe for...
Yeah, I think that's going to be it for the show notes, just the recipe.
Just the bread recipe. That's it. Everybody, I feel like that is actually a question that has been asked often in our Facebook
group. Is it really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I guess it's gotten... it's been mentioned a few times,
people
a few different times.
Like
so.
The bread.
Because yeah. It's excellent.
And
it's
even more recipe. Now, man. Everybody wants to make bread. So, all right, we'll put that recipe up.
And if you haven't already subscribed to our podcast, look for How to Money wherever you're listening to this episode. Make sure that you are subscribed, and if you haven't already, leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts, and we would really appreciate it. So Joel, Kate, and Emily, until next time,
best friends out.
Best friends out.